Welcome back to the Golden Age of Baseball with Eddie Robinson, baseball's oldest living player. In this podcast, Eddie talks about the birth of his daughter, ping pong with Bobby Riggs, and other great stories about life and baseball in the U.S. Navy during the Second World War. So sit back and enjoy another slice of baseball history with someone who actually lived it.
We had a pretty good team in Norfolk. Let's see, we had a guy named Smith, who was the catcher. He had a great arm and was a very good catcher, but he couldn't hit. And his later, after he came out of the Navy, he realized that he wasn't going to hit and wasn't going to make it to the big leagues. His name was Vinny Smith, and Vinny became an umpire and worked his way to the big leagues and was a major league umpire for a long time. I played first base regularly, and we had a second baseman, Benny McCoy. Benny was a good second baseman, left-hand hitter. He had played with the Tigers in the big leagues, and he had been one of the players that Kennesaw Mountain Landis, the commissioner, had turned free because of a major league violation and had gotten $25,000 bonus to sign with the Tigers. So he was their regular second base. At shortstop, we had the New York Yankee regular shortstop, Phil Rizzuto. Phil was a great little guy. Everybody loved him. Everybody had fun with him, and he was a darn good player. He didn't hit with power, but he could bunt and run. And in the field, he didn't miss a ball. He was a great fielder and just a pleasure to have on the team. Our third baseman was Jeff Cross. He was one of those guys that didn't quite have major league ability. He played as high as AAA, had a little cup of coffee with the Cardinals, but never was a regular big leaguer. We had Mel Priebisch in left field. He had a little time in the big leagues, but he was just not a major league player. And in center field, we had Dominic DiMaggio, who was Joe DiMaggio's brother. And Dominic was a regular center fielder for the Boston Red Sox. A very good player. He was an excellent outfielder, had a good arm, speed, and was a good hitter, but not with power. Hit to all fields. He was just a very good player. We had Don Padgett, who was a major league right fielder with the St. Louis Cardinals, had good power, big, strong guy. And Freddie Hutchinson also played outfield. And he spelled Padgett in right field occasionally. Hutch would pinch hit and do other things and beat bells off the wall. I'll never forget him doing that. Dominic was playing center field one day, and Hutch happened to be playing right field. And they converged on a fly ball, which was hit to right center field, and they ran into each other. They had a good collision. Knocked them both down and stunned them both. And looked like they were hurt badly. Well, what do you think? The captain jumped up off the bench. He parked his car right next to the dugout. He'd pull it in and park it there, get out of his car, walk into the dugout. He jumped up and got his driver, who stayed with the car, and had his driver drive him out to center field to see how badly they were hurt. There went the captain and his driver, driving out to center field. They got out, and they were with the trainer and manager, motives looking at the players. After it was decided that they were okay, DiMaggio's eye had been cut from his glasses, but other than that, they were okay. The captain got back in his car, and his driver drove him back to the dugout, and he got out and came back in and watched the rest of the game. We had a good pitching staff. We had Tommy Byrne, who was a left-hand pitcher for the Yankees, Charlie Wagner, who was a right-hand pitcher for the Red Sox, and Jake Early, who was a right-hand pitcher for the Boston Braves, and a bunch of young guys that had pretty darn good arms. And we played the air station a lot. We played them hard because we felt like we had to win. If we didn't win, Bodie would change the personnel of the team. And that would mean you'd go to sea. And we didn't want to go to sea. We wanted to finish the baseball season. Then they could send us to sea. But every game was nip and tuck. We did win, I guess you'd have to say, two-thirds of the games. But they were all good games and exciting games. And they were well attended. We'd always have a sellout crowd. Sailors would come and fill the stands. Had bleachers down the right and left field foul line. And they would fill the bleachers. And they were very vocal. Of course, most of the fans were from the training station. Sailors were Air Force guys, and they didn't bother to come a couple of miles. They'd have to come to watch the game. We had a lot of fun. I know Phil Rizzuto was going to get married while he was in the Navy, and it was during the summer. Anyway, he was getting married, and we were going to pull a joke on him. So the day before he was getting married, we were all in the shower after the game, and we took Phil down, and we painted his privates with Jepson Violet. And Jepson Violet is purple liquid. And when you get it on you, it won't come off. You can't wash it off with soap and water. It's just there to stay until it kind of just wears off. So we did a good job of painting Phil with Jepson Violet. And he got married the next day. And when he and his wife went to bed that night, I know she was disturbed with the sight of him with all the Jepson Violet on him. But anyway, We were always pulling tricks on guys, and that was just one of them. That was, I thought, a funny one. Probably shouldn't have done it, but we did. The air station had some good guys on it. They had Pee Wee Reese, the outstanding shortstop for the Brooklyn Dodgers. He was on their team. Eddie Shokes played first base for him. He's a major leaguer. And Herman Franks, big league note, he played with the Giants and was a manager for years in AAA. And I think he also managed in the big leagues. He was their manager. And they had a good pitching staff, as I told you. Hugh Casey was on their pitching staff. And they had some very good pitchers. Not notable major league pitchers, but good. And they played us very tight games. And then at the end of the season, we had what was dubbed as a Navy World Series. And we were playing a seven-game series against the air station. It was a real sellout. It was overflowing crowds. It was very tight. Every game was a low-scoring game, well-pitched. And wound up, we were tied at three games each. And we went into the seventh game to decide who would win. And we won. We won the Naval World Series. That made Captain McClure very happy and made our manager, Bodie, very happy. And so we ended the season on a high note. I failed to tell you, but we didn't just play the air station. We played other teams. We played just about every day of the week. We would play other Navy bases around their head teams, and we would play them. We'd play Army bases. We went to North Carolina and played North Carolina pre-flight school. Ted Williams was there at the time. He and Johnny Pesky. We played a full schedule. I got married while I was there, while I was in Norfolk. I married Elaine Elder from Baltimore, Maryland. And we had our first child, Robbie Ann, a little girl, while we were in Norfolk in the Navy. Robbie Ann was such a sweet little girl. And we lived next door to Pee Wee Reese. We had a Navy housing, and Pee Wee lived next door to us, he and his wife. They didn't have any children. So we did that all summer, and in the winter, that winter, they had a great basketball team. Max Bishop is one of the players that I remember. I can't remember the basketball players' names, but they were all famous college players who had been taken into the Navy or had enlisted in the Navy and were playing in Norfolk. And, of course, they had good competition. They played all the colleges around. They always had plenty of games to play, and they would play there at the big gym in at Norfolk training station, and it was a big gym. They would have like North Carolina and North Carolina State come in, all colleges from all over, and they also played other Army and Navy bases. So there was a full program going on there. And it was good. It was successful. But we weren't getting shot at. And that was about the middle of the winter. We got orders that they were taking all the baseball chief athletic specialists. They were taking them to naval training from Great Lakes Naval Training Station and Norfolk Naval Training Station and other places. And they were bringing them together in Treasure Island, California. And we were all going as one group on one ship to Hawaii. And from Hawaii, we would be shipped out as the Americans, our forces took those islands, Saipan, Tinian, Tarawa. They would send our guys, probably two guys, to an island to set up the program for a recreational program for the guys. So all of a sudden, it became very important, and we felt that like we were doing a really good thing in the war effort. We all gathered in Treasure Island, and there was a big group of us. I don't know how many, probably 20, 25 Major League players comprising this group that we had. And we stayed in Treasure Island a couple of days, and then we got on the ship to go to Hawaii. It was the USS Foundria, Foundria. And we were all signed upper and lower bunks, took out from the San Francisco area and sailed under the Golden Gate Bridge, headed for Hawaii. One of our group, Mickey Vernon, who was the first baseman for the Washington Senators, had led the American League in hitting. He became seasick. He got seasick before we got to the Golden Gate Bridge. We left the Treasure Island, where the ship was in dock there, and it must not have been 5 miles to the Golden Gate Bridge. And darn if he didn't get sick before we got there. And he was seasick the whole 7 days that we were en route to Hawaii. They finally, about the third day, he couldn't eat. He he couldn't even take care of himself. They took him to sick bay and put him to bed in sick bay, and he was there the whole 7 days that we were en route to Hawaii. When we got to Hawaii, we all had our sea bag, and we threw our sea bag over our shoulder, and we were disembarking down the gangplank. Well, Mickey could barely carry his sea bag. He was so weak. And I remember him going to the edge of the ship and throwing his sea bag over to the deck below so he didn't have to carry it down the gangplank. Then when he got down to the deck, he went over and retrieved his sea bag. I don't know where he was assigned, but he wasn't assigned where I was. I was assigned to Aiea Heights Training Station in Hawaii. And that was up in the hills from Honolulu. And it was toward U.S. Naval Training Station, Aiea Naval Training Station, which is the largest Navy training station outside the United States. It was huge. Of course, at that time, it was very busy. It took all the naval casualties, naval and marine casualties, coming back from the South Pacific. So it was very, very busy. Our camp, our base, was down the hill from the hospital, about 3 miles down the hill. We didn't have a ball field at Aiea Heights. So we had to build. The stands were there. It was all ready for a field, but there was no grass on the infield, and it was all brand new. Some of the players went to work building the field. They'd go up in the hills and harvest the grass, pull the grass, and bring it back down and dig furrows and the diamond and plant the grass. Infield and the outfield, and it turned out to be very, very nice. But in the beginning, of course, it was just all dirt. I got another job, catcher, called for the Browns. His name was Freddie Hoffman. Freddie and I were assigned to build a storage room for all the baseball equipment and all the athletic equipment. And so his name wasn't Freddie Hoffman. It was Benny Hoffman. Benny Hoffman and I worked together for days doing that. We got a Quonset hut to start with. That's one of those big oval buildings that sits there, and it's big enough inside you can do what you want. So what we wanted was shelves and an office or two. And that's what we had to put in there. So Benny and I went to work, and we did a bang-up job. We got nice shelving and two nice offices. We were able to take all the baseball equipment they wanted to bring us. We also had some tennis courts. We had tennis equipment. In the barracks where we lived, we had a recreation area. They had a table tennis table there. And we had a guy named Max Patkin. And Max Patkin was a clown. He was a pitcher in baseball, belonged to the Cleveland Indians. But he'd already begun his antics of being a baseball clown. But he was a really good table tennis player. The other really, really good player we had was Bobby Riggs. Now, Bobby Riggs, everybody remembers him. He was in with us as a sailor. He and Patkin used to have some great ping-pong battles. I mean, great. And Patkin was a very good dancer. On Sundays, just about every Sunday, we would go to the Royal Hawaiian Hotel. It was a Navy submarine rest center during the war. It was a beautiful hotel, beautiful beach. You could see Diamond Head, they had a recreation area. It was a big open area, but had a roof over it. They had a big bar, and they served beer, and the beer was very cheap. And on Sunday, they would have they had a really good Nickelodeon that played all the popular big band music. Glenn Miller, who was my favorite, Benny Goodman, and Tommy Dorsey, and Harry James. They had all those records, and the band would play, and then the jukebox would play, and the sailors and the girls would dance. They'd bring dates with them, and they would dance. And we would go to watch Max Patkin dance, and he was great. He was a guy that you'd pay to watch dance. He had all the steps. He could tap dance, and he had a couple girls that could keep up with him. And it was a real show to see Max get out there and do his stuff. Well, that was what our weeks were like when we got there, building the facility, the storage facility that Benny and I built, and then the other guys building the field for the baseball. They never got to play on that field. The war progressed, and we took more islands, and all the guys I went over there with went on down to the South Pacific to different islands to do their job.
Thank you for listening to the Golden Age of Baseball with baseball legend Eddie Robinson. If you have questions for Eddie or would like to suggest a topic for him to discuss, please email eddie.robinson65@yahoo.com. This is Greg Ricks inviting you to check out Eddie's other podcasts. And for an even deeper dive into the Golden Age of Baseball, read his autobiography, Lucky Me, My 65 Years in Baseball, which you can find on goodreads.com and on Amazon.